Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. Today's podcast is going to be so fascinating. We're going to talk with Dr. Cambria Judd, and we're going to learn all about functional medicine. What is it? She's a board-certified internal medicine physician with a passion for holistic and integrative healthcare, and she's the founder for Beyond Functional Medicine, where she kind of brings evidence-based medicine with optional advanced functional integrative approaches to her patients' problems. And she's an expert on stem cells, exosomes, kind of science-backed disorders that are really changing how we treat our patients. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm actually a family medicine doctor, just in case you didn't make sure things are clear. And I'm board certified in family medicine and sports medicine, and then went on to do functional medicine training at Cleveland Clinic. So.
Amazing. Yes. Well, I think a lot of people want to see a physician who does functional medicine or integrative medicine. And can you talk a little bit about what's kind of the definition of functional medicine? How's that different from, for example, internal medicine or family practice?
Yeah, no, that's a great question because functional medicine, even when I heard the term, and that's coming, I really found functional medicine when I was in my sports medicine fellowship. And I remember thinking, functional medicine, integrative, holistic, we're familiar with those terms. Functional medicine, especially in medicine, was more like I was familiar with it in terms of functional movement from a sports medicine background. But it's a really a term, I think, that the Cleveland Clinic and Mark Hyman, Jeff Bland, that really go back on that named because I think they wanted to differentiate what functional medicine meant in terms, in regards to these other things like holistic or integrative. And functional medicine really is a science-based approach to reversing disease, just like allopathic medicine, we go to med school, is this science-based approach to understanding and treating disease. Whereas I think the term integrative medicine is just being able to integrate lots of different healing modalities, let's say using acupuncture or nutrition, but it's a little bit more general. Along holistic is also kind of just looking at the whole person. So I think those two terms are a little bit more general and just being more open to maybe traditional conventional medicine, where functional medicine has a little bit more meaning in that it is a science-based approach. That in reversing disease.
I think that's what a lot of patients are looking for right now. And the idea that traditional medicine just kind of treats chronic disease, screen for chronic disease, wait till you get one, and then attack it with medications. How do you preemptively screen your patients, assess their health status, and what kind of things are you doing like early on before there's even a disease to deal with?
Yeah, well, I found that myself. I think going into family medicine, I was really thinking of doing orthopedic surgery. So that was not really my path, but I did. I'm really glad I did that because I was more of the gatekeeper. I saw all this disease and these patients that all seemed to have the same problems and were on the same medications in family medicine. And I just thought, this is bizarre. I don't understand that these people are very different. They have different backgrounds. Why are they on the same medications? And there are lifestyle diseases, right, that we see today. When I learned about functional, it's one of those things that now you see bigger. And once you see more, you can't really go back. It was similar to when I did my sports medicine training. I remember looking back at seeing patients when I was a family medicine resident and thinking, oh my gosh, I just didn't even know what I didn't know. And so I, diagnose that ankle sprain wrong or, other things because, I just didn't have the education to look at the pathology, the symptoms in a more broader way. And functional medicine is similar to that. So once you learn what caused this and how to reverse it, you're able to have these tools to do that. And I call that the most of the patients that get go out, even for their yearly physical. I call those like you're not dying today labs, really, because that's about what they say. And that's it. The you're not dying today labs are simple. It's not a deep dive. And people really think, like, well, I've had my blood work from my doctor and they say I'm fine. And I'm like,
Yeah,
well, that
I
means,
passed.
yeah. I mean, standard of care is basically determined by insurance companies. And I mean, it's
Yeah.
not like there's anyone
Scary
really
thought.
good, bad behind all this. It's just that It is what it is. You know, if you look at the structure and why the structure is the way it is, then you're able to understand why the care is the way it is in this country. And you're right. I think the reason that people are looking for functional medicine is because conventional medicine is not working anymore for them.
I think you're right. I think the biggest example, one of the biggest examples of that is women's health, where women's hormones are just completely neglected. You're watched as you go through a process of like sweating and menopause changes and like what, you know, the night sweats, the entire symptomatology that's basically you're just told is very normal. This is part of the stage of life and there's nothing we could do about it. And how are you dealing with women's health issues and hormones in your practice?
And I was taught the same thing. I mean, really, hormones cause estrogen causes cancer, and that's what we're trained. And then you get into practice, and you're busy, and you just are afraid to do anything that you would. The last thing you'd want to do is cause cancer in a patient. When I was in functional medicine and really learned and dove into the WHI study, and which largest study ever done for the Women's Health Initiative on hormones, and really understanding picking apart that study on what really did it show and what it didn't show, and understanding the importance of using bioidentical estrogen and how important it can be. And for some people more than others, but some people extremely helpful and necessary, especially with brain health, with cardiovascular health, of course, just the regular like aging and skin and but inside, but like losing these hormones, it can be very devastating for people and what they go through. So, and it's amazing that even now, a lot of people, conventional doctors, OB-GYNs that are really good, they haven't gotten that, the learning and understanding. And so they are not comfortable in taking care of patients with bioidentical hormones. It's a hard one because, when patients come in asking for it, I kind of have to get a feel of, how much do they know? Are they the right candidate? You spend a lot of time talking to the patient about the risks because they're going to go and have lunch with a friend or with their sister-in-law who's going to tell them, well, I heard it causes cancer and my doctor says this, and then they're going to come back scared. So, you really need to, there's a lot of education that goes on when I see patients.
Now you're doing some of the very cutting edge things in your practice, like and giving stem cell treatments and exosomes. Can you dive a little deeper into that? Everyone, when they hear the word stem cells, they feel all buzzy, but I think that's something they have to be so careful to vet your provider and look at the scientific approach that they're using and what talk a little bit about what you're doing with stem cells in your practice.
I think stem cells can be, they're going to be a huge part of the future for us. And I do think it's a complicated field in that it's hard to vet that, even as a physician, because unless we're taking out patients' own stem cells and expanding those, which now, I mean, that can be done if you take out a little adipose. The adipose, actually, the fat cells will have stem cells in there that are viable for a lot longer than the bone marrow, which, at first I kind of thought it was opposite because I thought, well, the fat cells, they store toxins and you don't want to pull them from there. But actually, there's a way to take those fat cells out of the adipose tissue and grow them out, and they can be very effective used in large amounts. So I have a handful of patients that we do that to that have been doing that for quite some time, that have even had their fat cells extracted by another provider when I wasn't doing that. When I was full-time working in the hospital, I would refer out. And those, they use it in two ways. Some as just longevity. Quarterly, they'll take 100 million cells IV of their own. And then if they have an injury, we'll order more in. So they're banked in a lab in Florida that's FDA approved that holds those cell lines and grows them out as we need them. So that's one way to do it. That's using autologous, your own. Allogenic cells have been much more risky in the past, especially 5 to 7 years. When I first came out of sports medicine fellowship, I was working with a stem cell provider I really trusted. I was very close to this provider. I flew out to their lab. I looked at the cells. I was just doing joint injections. And I had great results. And then kind of, the FDA came in, and for many years, stem cells, I felt it was just too wild west. I needed to figure out where things kind of were going to, where the dust was going to settle. And now we're at a spot where we have a lot more research, and FDA's come in, and I think we're looking now at cells that even using allogenic cells can be safe for using them in terms of like IVs. When our first, we were supposed to have a call a few weeks ago, and my stem cell freezer had broke, and so my options were just throw them all away or throw them all in an IV and give them to myself and hope that some of them were still alive.
Yeah.
So I did that, and so obviously I feel comfortable enough with my product that I would take it myself. And I think that's really where you have to be. For me, that's looking at the research for each company. If you're using getting exosomes, from a tissue that's not your own. And then I really spent a lot of time to get to know the owners of these companies really well to find out, what their values and goals are. Is this a passion or is it just about making money? And it's really, you have to, I think that's the work you have to do. Many times when a rep will come in to try to sell something or tell me about their product, and I call the scientists and then ask questions and ask questions, and I'll get to, maybe the lead scientist or the owner, and they'll say, "No, you're the first doctor who's ever called me." And I think doctors need to do that. We're fiduciaries of people's health. So the patient can't have that on them. That just adds to the stress of not knowing where to go. So I spend a lot of my time really doing that to make sure I can find a good product, because I do think it's going to be really helpful in moving the needle forward in health using these products in the future.
I agree. If you're a consumer out there and you have an inclination to try stem cell therapy for a joint injection or for just overall health or for hair, whatever it is that you're doing, how possibly can you vet people in the community?
For the physicians, I would ask them, why did you pick this company? Do you have a personal relationship? Have you used this product yourself? What are the outcomes? How long have you been using it on patients? I mean, I think you need to ask those as a patient. You need to ask some of those questions. Can you show me some science based on that the company has done? We really need to take that. Unfortunately. I'm not saying, I think there's a lot of doctors out there that are amazing and people have great relationships with their doctors and they trust them. And that's ideal. That's kind of medicine my grandfather did and I try to do. But I think unfortunately that is a little bit coming less and less because of the structure of medicine these days and
Yeah.
how, people, you don't have a lot of just single practice primary care doctors that have their little individual offices. They're usually part of a group now. And that
Yeah.
changes how they practice.
It really does. I think it changes the psychology and reward structure and just like responsibility and personal attention, some at so many levels. Like, I don't know what we can do about it, but as you said, healthcare is going to be determined by insurance companies. And people who are like 9 to 5 workers, whether you're a doctor worker or an administrator, it's kind of frightening for all of us. I too have like a single practice provider office, and I definitely feel it's kind of a dying breed. But I also feel maybe medicine is headed towards this two-tiered system where you'll have that really super individualized care where it's you're under the care of an intellectual person, physician who you really truly trust, and like they're very hopefully very scientifically driven and not money oriented, versus being a member of a group practice where or a Kaiser or something where you see whoever's available who doesn't know you, who follows some corporate guidelines. Kind of scary.
And that's really where they're at. And you can look at it from the point of view of the physician and feel have compassion for them. And you can look at it from the point of view of the patient and have compassion. It's a tough situation. And doctors, I went back to med school after having 4 kids, so I was 31, and I'd run a couple businesses. But most of the doctors that I was with as colleagues, they went straight through school, right? Like we went to college, right, to do pre-med, and then they did medicine, and then they did residency, and then fellowship, and then they're in working. And even when I was in, I noticed my best friend for many years is CPA, MBA, and we'd run together. I'm a runner, and so we would go running, and she'd teach me about taxes, and her only clients were private practice surgeons, and so she would tell me like how little they knew about money. And so when I was in med school, I went to the dean and said, we should start this business and medicine group so we could teach doctors about money. Because if they're not good at managing money, they're going to go from the lowest tax bracket to the highest overnight when they're done with residency. And this is how they're going to make choices, and these choices will affect patients. And so why don't we start this program? But I realized quickly like how why these things don't happen. For one thing, all medical schools, these are academic institutions. The physicians that work there are not the mindset of entrepreneurs, most time. And they choose this also because of that. So you can see how it doesn't happen, and it's nobody's fault, but this is why things are the way it is. And yeah, now, I think that's why when I did concierge medicine for a while, and people where I live in Newport Beach found out that I know functional, they were, it was, I didn't realize. It was like a feeding frenzy because they had maybe their naturopath or their acupuncturist, and then they don't tell everything to everybody because they don't want to be yelled at by their primary care doctor. There's like an odds. And so for the patient, it's a really tough spot to be in. And so I think when they found me, I realized how important it is to have this, understand functional medicine as an MD, because I'm rare. There aren't many of us that do that. There's like naturopaths, but I think and acupuncturists, and for the most time, they because most of what we take care of in this country is chronic disease, right? Okay, it's like, I remember thinking, well, Eastern medicine, it can't be worth nothing. And I remember asking, like, even the dean at my med school, I wanted to do a internship at this, Eastern China and like Tibetan hospital that did Eastern medicine just to understand it. My dad had cancer when I was in med school, and I wanted to really understand health and sugar and why are we still offering sugar to cancer patients? Isn't it bad? And I'm trying to go through all this, and I read this book that I think the Dalai Lama's brother was interviewed, and someone said, you have access to all of it. What would you choose? And he said, well, that's easy. For acute, Western. For chronic, everything else, Eastern. And I thought that kind of does sum it up, right? Like when it comes to you get in a car accident, you're having a stroke or a heart attack, wow, being in America is amazing. You're going to get care really quick and be grateful to have it. And it's going to be, top tier. But what we don't do well is in chronic disease management.
Right. That's so true. I think we're starting to do some of that acute care in the office, though, even for longevity-seeking patients or patients who, like you said, you come in and get your full set of labs, you're not dying today. You passed your physical, but then you're like, but I'm just feeling awful. My hair's falling out, my skin is getting dull, my joints are creaking. Like, do I have to accept this degree of slowed deterioration and aging? What are some things you're doing now in your practice for IV drips and peptides that can really change that trajectory of how you age?
Yeah, so patients that we see, and in the program I started at Hoag Hospital here too, we get a really very, very elaborate, very comprehensive history, and more than you get at another place. And it's all digitized, but it really is asking, have you had any environmental exposure to toxins? We're looking at dental history, birth history, talking about it, relationships, trauma in life, not just symptoms. And then we come in the lab set that our first to start. And what I do now, it's a hand-picked set of labs. And in that lab, and it goes to Quest or LabCorp or whatever, but it's a deep dive. It's giving me hints. There's patterns. So I'm not just looking at your one thyroid. I'm looking at all the levels of thyroid hormone so I can see at what level that might be off a little bit. And we're looking at optimal ranges, very different than what's been determined normal ranges in labs, because that's the other thing. Those are determined by insurance too, because when they fall out of that range, that means something has to be done, and that's going to cost a company money. Who's paying for the health of that patient? So if you look at, let's say, a thyroid, something, TSH, for example, to see how well your thyroid's functioning, 0.5 to 4.7 or something within that is could be normal. Well, that's a pretty big range, right? So we have these very large ranges. Some ranges in conventional medicine are not even really determined. DHEA, for example, which is a really important hormone that determines very important for longevity and for brain, and it's making other hormones like testosterone and cortisol. And so there's really even no normal ranges at all in there. Like, I know where I like patients to be, but if a patient came in at a level of 14, and I like to keep women like 250, let's say, someone my age, that that will stay normal on the lab. And so I'm able to get a set of labs that I can start seeing a lot of these patterns. And then I could explain to the patient, I always at that first visit explain what constitutes health, what are the principles, and how do things get off, so that they understand themselves how this is happening and how the body works. And a simple And really, I do that like in, the first session, and they, it's not something they have to take notes on. They'll remember it, right? I use analogies so that they understand, because everyone needs to understand this body that we are living in for this experience here on Earth more than we do.
That's very true. I think I really like your approach. I'm gonna have to drive down to Newport Beach to see you.
You come see me.
I
Yes.
have to escape this terrible fire trauma.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's really crazy. I don't know how people are gonna focus on their own health, because there's so much pollutants circulating and smoke, and like people who've been severely traumatized by losing their homes. And I can just not imagine the stress that everyone's going through right now. I'm at the periphery of it. I feel it. But in some ways, modern life is like that. It's an everyday assault on your senses, the microplastics, the toxins, the pollutants, the environmental disruptors that affect your hormones. I really think that humans have a lot of challenges, more so than we did in our grandparents' day. It's just really
For sure.
amplified. Yeah.
And I've seen that, in running the program over at the hospital at home now. I started a functional medicine program for them. Then I did it because I really felt that there needed to be something that was good for the patients in the community. There are people who are doing functional medicine, but most of the time, those providers are just single providers. They don't take insurance. It's a cash-based system. And I understand that from their point of view, that's really, it's a lot of work. So that's really the only way they're going to be able to make money that makes sense to them, and they've gone out and paid out of their dime to do this extra training. And so I really commend that they want to be that kind of provider to help give patients a higher quality of life. But on the patient side, they pay a lot for insurance. They have maybe a team of other providers that they need, whether they're gastroenterologist or their OB-GYN or whoever their cardiologist. And so for them, it's not the greatest because those records don't cross over. And do you see what I mean? So like for the hospital, with Hope being it so tight in this community and people being so committed and to that hospital, we built the program so that all those records are in there. They feel like it's one home. It's better for the patient. And because it's Hope, there isn't like a one doctor that's like, well, I need to make more money than that. So we were able to do this, I think, at the least expensive offering possible that I could saw that was the most comprehensive. But even so, going to kind of lay that down, but we have every day at one, we have a patient review with the team. So every nutritionist is in there, and all the nutritionists are assigned to different people, nurse practitioners, and we go over people that are struggling or having, maybe not responding to detoxes and moving the needle. And I've felt this for the last year especially. We have to do more. We're not getting, if you think about the body as supply and demand, right? Like, what am I getting? What are you giving me today to do the work? And what do you need from me? Think of it terms like that, right? Just simple. And, sleep, exercise, nutrition, stress management, and detox. Like, those are the biggest, okay? And we won't talk about other like chronic stuff that can be putting a lot of pressure on the body, but on their day-to-day, right? So we know that if we, are traveling and we don't get much sleep, and then we're not eating well and we're drinking too much and not eating enough nutrition and we're stressed, it's not going to be great. We're not putting a bunch in the bucket of helping our body. But hopefully that doesn't go on forever and then we're able to kind of catch up. But these days, because of our food, really, the soil depletion, the chemicals that are on our food, and the chemicals that are exposed to that's not even on our food, if you look at those two things that have kind of been increasing exponentially, it puts us in a tough spot on how do we, are we able to mitigate these situations to a point that our body can overcome it. And, I had patients. The reason I started doing IV ozone, which is not something I was like up to do, I sent people to other places, hopefully that they could get this done, because it's such a good detoxifier. Takes out the microplastics, removes the spike protein, takes out glyphosate. What else? Mold, Lyme, viruses. And I honestly, when I first started doing IV ozone outside of, Hoag, I had to get another clinic to do it just to help these patients that we weren't able to move the needle on. I was blown away at the response rate that we had. And people were so grateful. They felt like their lives were back. I mean, some of these were too, that they had gotten the COVID vaccine and all of a sudden it triggered Parkinson's. Now, did COVID cause Parkinson's directly? No. But the environment that people are in, they don't realize how close to the edge they were, because we don't run labs to let them know that. And then something just comes along that puts a big inflammatory, hit to them, and boom, something gets triggered, Parkinson's or something else. And so it's really about understanding, it's not one thing, it's about understanding the process and how our body will do whatever it can to keep us good as long as it can until it just can't. And then we never know what that's going to be, when that the straw is going to break. And then that's when they come in, right? So yeah, I'm worried about our environment and this, with all this, the toxicity, it's a lot for us to clear out, and the stress. So, stress is not a bad, in terms of stress, it's not all stress is bad. You have eustress, which is good stress, right? That we get stronger from. Latin root EU. That's exercise is a stress to the body. You stress the muscle, it gets stronger. Starting a new job, having a baby, a move. Normally, these things, we kind of know what to do. We have a level of control. It's the distress that kills us, that causes the cancer. And the distress is stress that we don't feel we have control over. And it's usually tied to a fear that's connected to a belief system that we picked up, right? And a lot of times that's what I'm having to really get to the bottom of when I'm meeting with patients on what is driving this, what is driving you off cliff, what has driven this whole process. And if I just take care of their leaky gut or their SIBO or whatever, the microbiome fix, and I don't take care of the fact that they feel that in order to be good enough, worthy, or deserving, they have to be and do these things, A, B, C, and D, that is pushing their body beyond what they're giving it for supply, that we're going back to the same thing. Does that make sense?
It really does. I think one of the tools that you're using really effectively in your practice is, well, you mentioned the ozone, but can you talk a little bit about what IV drips and what peptides you're putting people on?
We do. And I'm very careful on how I stack things. Someone just comes in and says, "Oh, I want an NAD or a methylene blue or high dose vitamin C or nutritional things." Some things I feel like sure, but it's hard for me being that fiduciary. I want to know, well, let's make sure this is the right thing for you right now. And I think I use all those. There can be very powerful antioxidants. Methylene blue could be a very powerful antioxidant, along with glutathione, in an IV for the right patient. But you have other patients that maybe have mast cell activation, and something like that, going in and having one, they're going to have a bad reaction. So it's important to have to be careful and not just show up. I mean, I think most of the IV lounges, they're just doing more of a nutritional that's pretty safe, right? They aren't going to get in the weeds like that. But sometimes what patients really need to get better is a bigger therapy that's going to be effective, but it also needs to be done correctly and sometimes in sequence of other things, right? Like, when do you give ozone? When do you get exosomes or stem cells or methylene blue in relation to ozone? You need to know how the body works. I mean, the patient doesn't need to know that, but we as practitioners need to make sure we're doing that well so that the patient's going to get maximum efficacy out of that treatment, and for sure not hurt. So, because it can happen.
Is there a starting point with peptides you like to try? Is the BPC 157 like one of the more safe ones that you put more people on? Or are you using immune-based peptides, or I
think
any, now
peptides
it's
are crazy.
individualized.
I think they're amazing. I mean, I've used NAD for a long time. Personally, it's probably been my savior for getting through things. That and DHEA, I think it like kept me going because it just keeps me, I have more bandwidth, right? I've got a little margin. I'm not like slammed. So that's a really powerful one. I like BPC a lot. I think I've done a lot of with GLPs, you know, just with helping even microdosing with Parkinson's and the effects of that. You know, I think the thymosins we've used too. The biggest, I think peptides are so powerful, but the hardest thing with them is getting quality. Like, where are they coming from? Do we know who's making these? And that is a extremely difficult project to stay on top of. And so, you know, I 2 weeks ago I drove to Arizona to meet with someone because, you know, I think that they had a good peptide project, but I mean product. But I wanted to really, you know, you have to do this. You have to spend time with these people and know that really, I mean, you're still taking a chance, but I do everything I can to really feel safe about this because, you know, this online and people getting it and not for research use only, not for anything. And but then it's all people can get, so they're ordering it. You know, it's a little scary. I
A little
mean,
crazy,
yeah, most of the time are they probably going to be okay? Okay, I think so. But you know, there's been some reports. You know, people have gotten botulism or different things, and it could be very scary. We're talking about sterile compounds. If anyone's ever had NAD or anything, you know, you put a little of that in your subcutaneous tissue, and in 30 seconds, you're feeling it in your brain. And this isn't just benign. This gets into your body and has effects really fast. And we need to be careful about what we're putting in.
Anyone who's not careful or skeptical or worried about where they get their peptides, how they're sourced and manufactured, like stay away from those people. They're workout guys selling it themselves because they've used some online brand that they like. I'm scared of that.
I'm amazed too how many people just will buy and providers that just don't ask questions. They just, oh, get me signed up and let's go. And you know, I think, yeah, I can't say there's two products right now, companies that I'm kind of going back and forth on for that. And I can't say that I'm 100% feeling confident even now. So yeah, that's one of the hardest things. Finding these, it's the hardest things for me is finding quality products and the things I have no control of that are like stem cells that are not your own. So if I harvest someone's and send them, then okay. And peptides. Yeah. I mean, because other
What
things
about?
like sterile stuff used for IVs and NAD and methylene blue, these are coming from sterile compounding pharmacies. We're fine. It's the other fringe that's
How
tough.
about exosomes? What exosomes are you,
Yeah.
like your own derived
Oh my
ones,
gosh.
or
Exosomes.
is
Yeah.
that
You know,
other
the exosomes I think are really
term?
safe. Exosomes at least I feel a lot safer about. And you know, even now they're able to take exosomes and because they're kind of like the inside, they're like the workers inside that they don't have the genetic material that like a stem cell has. So you have a lot more flexibility there. And but you know, and they're it's amazing the strains of these exosomes that they were getting that we can just do for face, like right, that you're probably using for hair that are strains that are specific for that. So yeah, I love that. And or joints. So I think we're about to see the next year or two. A lot more come out that the products are good, and we have trials on them. The FDA, there's quite a few in FDA trials right now that show that they've been safe. I think with COVID, there was a lot of emergency use for things like that. It was helpful because we were able to get a lot of people to use something and see that it's safe. So there's some silver linings there.
Yeah, there really are. Are you doing any longevity practices of your own that you could share with the audience? Like, what's your regimen in terms of your supplements? Are you cold
Yeah.
plunging, sauna?
So I think I really try to stick with those principles of health I know. So sleep, I know the hours between 10 to 2 are the most efficacious. You want to be asleep between 10 o'clock and 2 a.m. for the most part. That is when it's like the moon cycles, but when your brain is able to, the lymphatics of the brain is able to clear out, you're having the circadian rhythm, hormones are balancing all during that time. That's tough, right? But like, I really try to make sure I'm asleep by 10 o'clock. And then first morning light. And I really think that's powerful to come and have just, I mean, in my house, I like open the window sometimes and because the light comes right in because you need to have it unobstructed, not like with glasses, but I'm not ready to like really walk outside. So I just like, I do things like that. I know what's the most high yield and I try to, I'm an efficient person. I like to cut through the chase and do the mass efficiency. So that exercise really, there's days that I feel really good and I run and do some weights. I've run for a long time. I basically do yoga, weights and running, but not a ton, right? I would say I'm not an extremist because that is one thing, and especially in sports medicine, I see people push it too much and there's just too much load on their body. I mean, when I was a sports medicine, a doctor in my fellowship, I took was down in at Chula Vista when there used to be an Olympic training center, and all these athletes had low white blood cell counts. And I thought, why? And my attendings were like, oh, just because their immune systems, it's good. It's just because they're so healthy. And later I'm like, no, it's not good to have a low white count. You're actually like immune suppressed because their body is just not getting what it needs. It's just exercise is too much, sleep's usually not enough, and not getting nutrition for the demand. And so I would say that's something that every day people need to really tap in and be like, what does my body need today? So I try to do that. Detoxifying, I think you have to realize that you've got to drink good water and enough every day. These are the criticals, right? You need to be having at least two bowel movements a day. These are the main ways we detoxify and sweat, right? And those all do, we detoxify through urine, stool, and sweat mainly, but and each one, certain compounds and toxins come out different ways. I will do exosomes 100%, I mean, IV ozone every 6 months for the rest of my life because there is nothing that is efficient as pulling out a liter of toxins out of your body that your body doesn't have the lymphs clear out. I think that needs to be almost in this day and age, one a thing that we just do. NAD is a
How do you feel
powerful.
after that? How do you feel after you pull out a liter of? I've never done
You, your
ozone.
brain feels clear. You have energy. I mean, depends like how much. If you go in with like joint pain, we have people, the response is completely different depending, right? So I have people that have been on maximum Parkinson's meds for their and not taken medication at all afterwards. Like that's an extreme, right? But you have people who've had joint pain and fatigue for years since COVID, having COVID or getting the vaccine. Then after the first time they go and they don't have any pain until maybe the day before. We do them 3 sessions a week apart if we know that there's something like a toxin that we're removing. And then after that, they can kind of do maintenance, every quarter or every 6 months. But the amount of microplastics now, right now, that how much toxins we get, and it's out there in the news, but we get exposed to the same amount of toxins in a month that like you were talking about generationally ago, like our grandparents did over their life. That's big. I mean, that's a huge demand. And then, I have I think it's so important to have a spiritual or meditation practice that works for each of us, that we just are able to step back, get some perspective, go inward, watch ourselves, have an ability to watch what triggers us, be curious about that, right? And really, I try to even talk to my patients, if you're triggered, that's coming from fear. So be grateful. Instead of like ignoring it or being defensive, be curious because there's something there for you to learn about yourself that's going to give you freedom and joy. There's no, that's keeping you back. So I'm, changing that perspective. And I, when I get triggered, I have to do the same thing, right? Because we all gonna have those. So I think those are things I try to do. I don't love taking a bunch of supplements. I'm not a big supplement girl. I try to eat really well. I try to eat really quality food. And so it's not a super extreme thing. I'm not like I bath all the time because I hate being cold. But I mean, have done it. I think red light is big. I'm liking that. I think that's something that would be really helpful for people to have in their home. It helps with energy, mitochondria. I think it's a big enough thing that that's something that should be in someone's weekly, regimen at home.
I love all this. I love all those ideas. I think You have a very special approach, and your practice sounds like very personalized and really pretty amazing. I think that this focus of blending kind of traditional medical insights with all the cutting edge functional techniques that you're doing is kind of the wave of the future. And I hope that all of the listeners out there get to find someone who's as dedicated as you to help take care of them.
Well, thanks, Dr. K. I appreciate you having me on, and we'll have to stay in touch. You should come out here. I think we're going to get a lot of people from Los Angeles into Orange County.
I know. I came up there for the Octane Aesthetic Tech meeting. I was there the first night of the evacuation, so I had a at least in a really nice hotel that night. But then I really, psychologically, I have to be back near my people and my home and everything. So I really hope LA settles down with the fires, and
I
then
do
people
too.
have a chance to focus back on their health and detoxifying, getting rid of their traumas, and just building that reservoir of health that we need. Where can people find you on all your platforms if they want to reach out with questions about the things you do?
My website is CambriaJetMD.com. I think on social media we have Beyond Functional Medicine. They find me there, and I think that's really it. You can find me in one of those two places.
That's a perfect, sounds like a perfect trip out for the
It's a good trip. Come out. Let's do that. We'll have
day.
lunch. We'll talk. I'll show you all my new stuff.
I would love that. Thank you so much. Well, there you go, guys. In case you didn't catch that, it'll be in the show notes. But Beyond Functional Medicine, check out Dr. Cambria Judd, and stay tuned for more good info on things that we need to be doing to innovate how we treat ourselves. If we wait for modern medicine to fix us, it's going to be too late and we'll end up treating chronic disease. So I want you guys to learn more about longevity and kind of the cutting edge things we're doing both in aesthetics and in the medical world to like push the needle. So that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our amazing skincare and lots of resources. So many blog posts you can read about these exciting new technologies. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.